listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary-Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers' Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. Regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231 to 198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers, 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DalPob report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50 to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Spam is uniquely American. This mysterious meat-like concoction in a pull-tab can is a made-in-the-USA icon of American marketing, produced by Hormel Foods in Minnesota. I happen to love Spam, and no, I don't want to know what's in it. I subsisted on fried Spam sandwiches to get me through college, and I've even been a tasting judge of the sometimes startling Spam concoctions prepared for the renowned Spamorama contest held in my town of Austin, Texas for the past 26 years. But I was stunned, and not a little hurt, to learn that the corporate purveyors of Spam are now trying to hide the Americanism of this potted meat delicacy. It seems that Hormel is concerned that its Spam sales could be hurt in England because of the Brits' rather intense opposition to George W.'s war in Iraq. Indeed, a poll finds that 20% of consumers in Britain, Japan, and elsewhere say they'll shun such identifiably American products as Spam, Marlboro, and Starbucks to protest Bush's my way or the highway approach to the rest of the world. To counter this possibility, Hormel has launched a $3.7 million marketing blitz in England in an effort to position Spam as quintessentially British. The ads, featuring typical Brits, portray Spam as a longtime part of the British culture, as though it's a homegrown product with no connection to that place across the pond. Hormel has even anglicized the Spamorama Festival, The Spam Chippy of the Year Award is presented to the British Fish and Chip Shop that makes the best dish from this pink meat stuff. They also named the Spam Chef of the Year in England, a culinary honor that was recently won by a chap who makes Spam wontons. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Hormel, stop hiding your beautiful pink piece of Americana under a British bushel. You should strut your stuff as one of the good things from America. Instead of Bush's gunboat diplomacy, show the world Spam diplomacy.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder. Spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, all across the continental United States and big chunks of Canada and Mexico as well. Streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org and broadcasting on radio stations from California to North Carolina and all about in between. Welcome to our program. So very pleased to have you with us. Today, of course, the great anniversary.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
It was the beginning of the United States' entry into what had already become World War II. World War II, a war started by two nations that invaded other nations, claiming that those nations had weapons of mass destruction and represented a threat to them, but in fact because they wanted the resources of those other nations. Interesting op-ed piece, or editorial rather, in the Montpelier Times Argus, my hometown newspaper, one of the few independently owned newspapers. It's really remarkable living here in Vermont. The largest paper in the state is the Burlington Free Press, which is owned by Gannett. And then every morning I get that, and I get the Times Argus, and I get the Wall Street Journal. And the Times Argus and the Burlington Free Press are the supposedly two Vermont newspapers. And every day, without exception, every day, there are at least two or three wire service stories. I mean, just regular, plain old wire service AP stories that provide information that would cause you to wonder about the sanity of the Bush administration, or report on, you know, well, things aren't going so well in Fallujah. Things that, what is it, liberal bias, or is it the truth about what's going on? And they don't appear in the Burlington Free Press, the Gannett paper. They simply don't appear. It's almost as if I'm reading two newspapers from two separate nations. Everything in the Burlington Free Press, the Gannett paper, It's always, you know, good news about Bush, good news about the war, everything's fine, and everything's fine. And I'm talking about just, you know, picking and choosing Associated Press stories, which make up probably 80 or 90% of the content of both of these newspapers. It's really quite remarkable. It's not about, you know, what makes it to the front page, although you see that as well. But in any case, in the Times Argus today, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, the real Pearl Harbor is the editor, is the editorial, rather, excuse me. At 7:35 a.m. on December 7th, 1941, the first of two waves of Japanese planes arrived over the American base in Hawaii. And they point out 2,403 people were dead. As a consequence of this, 188 planes were destroyed, 8 damaged or destroyed battleships. This was the core of our Pacific Fleet. It was taken out by the Japanese on Pearl Harbor Day. And the following day, both Germany and Italy, who had mutual protection treaties with Germany, or with Japan, rather, declared war on the United States. And we declared war on them. And that war lasted until, as you probably know, 1945. So, 4 years for the United States involvement. But the world had been into this war for a while before we got into it. Now, notes the Times Argus in this editorial, the United States finds itself in an altogether different type of war with a totally different type of justification. The 9/11 attacks were launched not by an enemy state like Japan, but by the followers of a radical terrorist mastermind, Osama bin Laden, and were motivated by ideology rather than economic and military ambitions. This is so key. George Bush has gone out of his way to try and draw parallels between 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, and the reality is that Pearl Harbor was launched by a military empire that was doing what empires do. Empires are essentially parasitic organisms. Parasites reach out and put their tentacles into nearby organisms and suck the resources from them, suck the energy from them, suck the life force from them. Like metastasized cancers. Now, some parasites have symbiotic relationships. For example, there are fungi that live on the roots of trees. In fact, it's become so symbiotic that the trees can't survive without the fungus living on their roots, because the fungus, although they're taking nutrients from the roots of the trees, this is true of virtually all pine trees, for example, although the fungus are taking the nutrients from the tree, they're living off the tree. In the process of doing it, they change the pH of the soil around them, the acidity and alkalinity, in such a way that the roots of the trees, and modify the surface of the roots of the trees in such a way that the roots of the trees can now absorb minerals that they might not otherwise have been able to absorb. So it's a healthy symbiosis. But empire is when a nation becomes an unhealthy parasite. The Romans running out of wood, the Italians. And so they went from the nation state of Rome, slash what we would call Italy today, to becoming the Roman Empire. They reached out for wood and for slaves. The Spanish Empire reaching out for gold and for slaves. The British Empire reaching out for goods that could be imported and for slaves, for raw materials to fuel the industries of England during the industrial period, during the early industrial period. But you know, in the United States before 1776, there were laws that said, as they did in India, I mean, this is what Gandhi protested against, that said that we could export cotton to India, but we couldn't manufacture our own clothing here. A family could do it, but you couldn't create a business to do it. You had to send the cotton to England. Did I say India? You had to send the cotton to England.
where it would be converted into clothing and then sold back to us in the United States. The principal agent of this, the East India Company, the Walmart of its day. It was the East India Company that the colonists rose up against in 1773 in the Boston Tea Party. It was not the British government. It was the East India Company. The British government was merely their agent. So anyhow, here we find this very different type of war. Historically, wars between nations have been fought over control of resources, access to resources. Who's got the oil? Who's got the gold? Who has the slaves? Who has the wood? Resources. Osama bin Laden was not particularly interested in resources. He was not a nation. He wasn't trying to maintain the lifestyle of millions of people so that they wouldn't overthrow him, which is what kings do. I mean, there is a certain, the idea of benevolent kingdoms, there is this certain reality that if a king, even the worst tyrannical despot, if he doesn't make sure that there's at least some minimal threshold of decent life for his or her citizens, that the French Revolution will be repeated. Like Louis XVI found himself facing the guillotine. You've got to maintain a certain level of survivability. It might be fairly low. It is in a lot of countries. But it's got to be something. Otherwise, you know, you get the situation. I remember in Uganda when Idi Amin overthrew Milton Obote. Obote had so bled his people dry that when Idi Amin, this sergeant in Obote's army, overthrew him, there was dancing in the streets. People were like, hey, the tyrant is gone. Little did they know. But in any case, nation states, empires, reach out and declare wars as Japan did against us because of resources. We had positioned parts of the Pacific Fleet between Japan and India in the Straits of Malacca, south of Indonesia, north of Borneo. I've sailed through that strait. It's a fascinating place. In fact, I sailed through it with a fellow by the name of Will Crinan, a physician who was Pol Pot's doctor when he was a Red Cross doctor. That's another story. I'll tell you someday. It's just an amazing story about Pol Pot and Cambodia. But in any case, we blocked oil from the Middle East to Japan, and that provoked Japan to attack us at Pearl Harbor, or at least that's conventional wisdom. And there's a lot of people who believe that Roosevelt did that intentionally, knowing that Japan would be provoked to attack us, and thus providing an excuse to get into the war, because the Republicans were so absolutely opposed to any participation in the war, because back then the Republican Party was the isolationist party, the peace party. But I digress. The point is that states, empires, are about exploiting others to maintain their lifestyle. This is why so many people in the world look at the United States and say, hey, you are 5% of the world's population, you're consuming 25% of the world's resources, and most of those resources are not coming from within the United States, therefore you guys have become an empire. And broadly speaking, other countries don't appreciate empires, particularly when they are its subjects. So our puppet governments, like the Shah in Iran, we put him in there when Mossadegh had nationalized the oil, kicked out the American oil companies back in the 50s and said, you know, these American oil companies operating in Iran here just taking all our oil and taking all the profits. Kick them out. Take the profit from the oil and give it to the people. We couldn't have that, so the CIA went in, overthrew Mossadegh, installed Pahlavi, the Shah of Iran. Eventually the Iranians said, you know, we just don't like this empire stuff. So now we're facing, instead of an empire attacking us, as has always happened in the past, we've got an idea attacking us. And so what do? We're idea stronger. Osama bin Laden to the attacks of 9/11. Which could have been used to turn the Arab world against bin Laden and end terrorism around the world, instead have had, to quote the Pentagon report that I shared with you yesterday in the third hour of the program, have had, quote, the opposite effect, end quote, and have worsened the situation. The United States is less safe than it used to be because of the Bush administration's actions. 20 minutes past the hour. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, tomhartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, a lot going on today. We have an electile dysfunction report coming up. We're going to talk about Bushonomics. Have they doomed communities across America? And what can be done about it? What is the alternative to conservative economics and to so-called free trade? And has the great experiment of placing our children on the assembly line of education worked? For those of you who know educational history, another way to put it would be, was Horace Mann right or wrong? Increasingly, it's looking like he was wrong. Or arguably both. But I have some real problems with Horace Mann. But that's a whole other thing. Our number 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into the chat room for one of the finest live chats on all of the Internet every day, 3 hours a day from noon to 3 Eastern time, drop into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. You can get there by just going to TomHartmann.com and clicking the live chat button up at the top of the page. Other buttons you'll find there. Listen to Archives, where you'll find an archive set put together by Mike Toth that has little clips from programs going back 2 years now on specific topics. They're organized by topic, as well as a link to White Rose Society, which carries months of entire programs, all 3 hours, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for going back to, I think he's got them going back to April. And you'll also find a link to our message board, where thousands of people are having tens of thousands of discussions on all kinds of things and lots of good information being exchanged, and a link called Articles on Democracy, which links you to all of the recent, over the last couple of years, things that I've published on Common Dreams and Alternet and other web sources, although usually the first place I submit everything. I just sent in a piece this morning, in fact, is to commondreams.org. One of my favorite websites. There's other fine ones there. OpEdNews.com is another one of my favorites. Alternet.org, I think. Truthout is a great website. Bunch of them. Anyhow, let's go to the telephones here. Matt in Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Where do I find that Pentagon report you were talking about earlier?
Geez, I'd have to go through my stack. The report itself, I don't have. What I have is the article about it that was published in the Independent in the UK. I'm looking to see if I've got it in my stack of stuff from yet. Yeah, I'll have to dig it out. I'll see if I during the break, I'll see if I can dig it out here and share it with you after we get off the air, or after I get back on the air, rather. But what I found particularly interesting was that the British press is reporting on this thing, but the American press isn't.
And you don't want to bring it up to any of your quote unquote counterparts either.
What do you mean?
Believe me, any of the righty talk shows.
Oh well, yeah, they're not gonna talk about it. I mean, this was a report that Don Rumsfeld had commissioned, and it basically said what's pretty obvious to everybody: we've started a civil war. We kicked over the hornet's nest. Iraq was a situation. Going back to 1920, I mean, read Lawrence of Arabia. Going back to the 1920s, when it was first cobbled together from three separate states that were part of the Ottoman Empire, that really should have been three separate countries. The Shiites in the south, the Sunnis in the center, and the Kurds in the north.
Well, and then we turn around and create Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that, too. That's not discussed in the report, so far as I can tell. But those who know the history of the area know that not only did we create him, but we supported him right up until about a month before we took him on in Kuwait in 1991. And Don Rumsfeld went over there in the 80s when he was Secretary of Defense and sold him a lot of the weapons that he used against his own people and all that kind of stuff. But that's sort of beating a dead horse. I mean, folks know that. I'll find that report for you, Matt, though, during the break. In fact, we've got a break coming up here in about 20 seconds. And during the commercials, I'll go digging through my pile from yesterday, and I'll share with you the source on that when we come back.
Appreciate it a lot, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Matt. Good to hear from you. I'm glad you're listening. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. The radical middle, I thought you were liberal. No, actually, I think the vast majority of America spot on totally agrees with the viewpoints you'll find articulated on this program. 29 minutes past the hour.
Everyone's favorite thieves are back.
We need a high-paying job.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And they're doing a number on Europe.
We need to catch the Americans.
Mr. Ocean is the best.
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts.
That is for making me a master thief.
Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film.
I'm freaking out.
Go to PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Starts December 10th.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary-Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. Regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231 to 198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers, 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DalPod report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50 to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Okay, here's where it is. It was published in the... I was wrong, it wasn't the Independent. It was the Sydney Morning Herald, which is the largest Sunday newspaper in all of Australia, the nationwide Australian newspaper published out of Sydney, the Sunday Herald. And I went over to our message board. I created a new thread in the Iraq section. It should be at the very top right now, or the second message down anyway, titled Pentagon Report. And you can just click on the link, and it'll take you right to the Sunday Herald article about it. The article by Neil McKay, who's the investigations editor, headlined, U.S. admits the war for hearts and minds in Iraq is now lost. And here's how the article starts out. The Pentagon has admitted that the war on terror and the invasion and occupation of Iraq have increased support for al-Qaeda, made ordinary Muslims hate the U.S., and caused a global backlash against America because of the, quote, self-serving hypocrisy, end quote, of George W. Bush's administration over the Middle East. The mea culpa is contained in a shockingly frank, quote, strategic communications report, end quote, written this autumn by the Defense Science Board for Pentagon Supremo Donald Rumsfeld. On the war of ideas or the struggle for the hearts and minds, the report says, Here we are quoting from this Pentagon report. American efforts have not only failed, they may also have achieved the opposite of what they intended. American direct intervention in the Muslim world has paradoxically elevated the stature of and support for radical Islamists while diminishing support for the United States to single digits in some Arab societies, end quote. This is the point that I was making, that when an empire attacks you, you attack back and you take down that empire. When an idea attacks you, you have to respond with an idea. This is so important. And the rest of the world does understand this. When Aldo Moro, the Prime Minister of Italy, the equivalent of the President of the United States, was kidnapped by terrorists in Italy, the Red Brigades, they stuffed him in the trunk of a car, and he died from being kidnapped. Can you imagine terrorists kidnapping and killing the president? The equivalent of that happened in Italy back about 15, 20 years ago. And what did the Italians do? Well, the idea that the Red Brigades were advancing was that Italian capitalism... I mean, I don't want to try and represent the Red Brigade's point of view because, frankly, I'm sure I'll do a bad job of it. But here's my understanding of it. Anyway, that Italian capitalism was somehow some kind of terrible thing, that the rich were getting richer, the poor were getting poorer, and that they needed to replace Italian capitalism with Soviet-style communism or something close to it. Let's go back to Bolshevism or something. You know, some notion like that. They were idealists. And they thought, as idealists so often do, that if you can simply force people to your way of thinking, that they'll eventually come around. Just like the neocons. If we can just force democracy on the Middle East, they'll come around. Doesn't usually work that way. It doesn't usually work that way at all. So what the Italians did was they responded with an idea. They said, these people here in Italy, these people, I'm not sure that they even called them terrorists. Why elevate them in stature? They called them criminals. They called them psychos. They said, these people have lost their connection to the Italian people. They are not committed to the rule of law. If you want to change the government, there are many means to do it, including the ballot box, participation, getting involved. But no, these people, they want to destroy our government. And the result of that was that the average Italian person was so disgusted by what the Red Brigades had done that the Red Brigades could not find sanction any longer. They couldn't find a place to hide. They couldn't show up at somebody's house and say, I'm with the Red Brigades, I'm on the run. Well, you put me up, and the person would say, oh, cool, you're one of them, we like those guys. No, that's not what happened. Instead, when people saw them, they would dial the equivalent of 911 and turn them in. And within a year or so, they were largely mopped up. You see the same thing happening to some extent. There are still ongoing irritations, but the same thing happening to some extent with the IRA in England, with the, I forget the name of the group in Germany that was planning terrorist attacks around that same time in Germany, with the November 17 revolutionary group in Greece. With Tim McVeigh here in the United States, we had a terrorist attacking the United States because he wanted white Christians to rise up. You attack an idea with an idea. You attack an idea by exposing its essential sickness. And on 9/11, when the rest of the world saw those towers go down, and now here the rest of the world said, oh my God, this is a bad idea. And in fact, bin Laden, in his last message, there was that little part that, you know, I don't think most people caught, where he said that the attack of 9/11 was more than they had expected. You know, they expected to damage a few floors of the buildings. They didn't expect to bring those things down, he said. He had said that before in another interview, too. Although, you know, it was more in a bragging context. You know, more successful than we expect. Well, what he discovered was that the majority of Muslims around the world saw this thing happen and said, these guys are nuts. There were candlelight vigils in Tehran. You had people in Pakistan going, we are now Americans. The headline in Le Monde, we're all Americans now. And the entire world could have mobilized and was willing to mobilize, including the Arab world, to find these Looney Tune guys and pull them out like a weed, to excise them like cancer. But no. Karl Rove goes down to Texas, as Bob Woodward chronicles in his book, in 2000. Says, we're going to win the midterm elections, and we're going to make you president in 2004. And in order to do that, we've got to have a war, because the people of America have never failed to reelect a president during time of war. Here's the list. You are going to be the strong leader, the decisive man. And so we attacked bin Laden as if he was an empire, and he wasn't. And therefore, we didn't get him. It's like trying to chase flies out of your house with a shotgun. The flies are laughing at you, and the house comes down around you. Pentagon report continues to say, thus, when American public diplomacy talks about bringing democracy to Islamic societies, this is seen as no more than self-serving hypocrisy. Moreover, saying that freedom is the future of the Middle East is seen as patronizing. Remember, that was the quote from George's campaign. In the eyes of Muslims, the American occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq has not led to democracy there, but only more chaos and suffering. U.S. actions appear, in contrast, to be motivated by ulterior motives. That would be oil, of course. And deliberately controlled in order to best serve American national interests at the expense of true Muslim self-determination, end quote. And it goes on, but I shared it with you yesterday, so I won't repeat it beyond that. And the link, if you could just go to TomHartmann.com, click on message boards, it'll take you to the message board. Click on Iraq, the Iraq section, right there at the top. There's the link. You get the whole article. Extensive quotes from the Pentagon report. And then, of course, you got Lakhdar Brahimi, the UN envoy to Iraq, telling a Dutch newspaper on Saturday, it's a mess in Iraq. If the circumstances stay as they are, I don't think we'll be able to have elections. No surprise there. I got some interesting news for you here about the elections. An electile dysfunction report. First, let's take a couple quick phone calls here, though. We've got some folks who've been waiting on the line. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, how you doing?
Fine. And Karl Rove, so sure of his philosophy, getting him reelected, that they got to install those phony voting machines.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to that. So what's
okay,
up?
But quickly, you know, Michael Moore needs to do another documentary. I think a great one right now. I think the people are ready for it. And it would exposing the neocons for what they really are.
Well, I'm telling you, Armin, it would be great if Michael Moore did that, but it's already been done. The BBC did it. It's called The Power of Nightmares. And it's a 3-hour special. It was so amazingly, outstandingly extraordinary and frightening and shocking that it caused Tony Blair to hop on a plane and fly over here to see George W. Bush. You want to see the thing, go to TomHartmann.com, click on our message boards, go to the Iraq section. It's the top article. And there's a link to where you can see it on Information Clearinghouse, .info, I think it is. They've got all 3 hours of videotape on there. And you got to watch the thing. You got to see it, Armin, because you're going to love it. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind?
How are you, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
That's your signature line, huh?
Well, it's also got to be true. I mean,
oh,
you know,
sure.
You can only go in one direction at a time. You might as well go up.
Well, I was listening to your analysis there of the situation with the Red Brigades. I remember that the Italian Communist Party, which albeit was a pretty moderate party and maybe still is.
They backed away from the Red Brigades.
Yes, they did. And
they completely disassociated themselves.
Right. And regards 9/11, you mentioned candlelight vigils in Tehran. I remember, and this was even before the Iraq invasion, when Gaddafi even said, hey, you know, This is a terrible thing. The Americans have a right to be mad, and they have a right to retaliate.
That's right. Gaddafi was on our side on this, and this was when we were still calling him a terrorist, before we decided we needed his oil more than we wanted to, you know, have our principles or whatever.
And I can even remember that before the Taliban became front-page news, reading a little report about how the Iranian mullahs thought the Talibans were loony. You know,
yeah.
So that's got to tell you something.
Yeah, well, and not only that, I mean, the Taliban was trying to negotiate to give us to bin Laden. And their initial negotiating point was, we will give bin Laden to any country except the United States because we're concerned that he won't get a fair trial there. And so, you know, we'll give him to anybody, you know, pretty much anybody else. And Bush said, we're just not going to negotiate. And they basically said, well, you know, we're even willing to discuss giving him to you. And no, we're not going to negotiate. We're just going to bomb you.
You know, I just talked to a lady here that works at the Catholic Church store in my neighborhood here, and she said she went to Europe. She went to three countries, I guess, Italy, France, and England. And I told her, I said, just jokingly, you didn't tell them you were an American, did you? She says, well, they don't hate Americans. She says, they just hate our president. I says, well, there's a lot of us that feel that way here, too. Maybe hate's too strong a word. But
I think fear is the word, frankly.
Well, I don't fear them because...
I'm not talking about you and me. I'm talking about the rest of the world. They're looking at the United States going, these guys are dangerous. They're unpredictable. They got big weapons. They've got a lot of power. And not only that, the United States is following an economic policy that could bring the rest of the world into something that would make the Great Depression look like a picnic.
Did you read that article, or it wasn't an article, I think it was a little news story on some guy on Wall Street? I think maybe I mentioned that last time I talked to you. I forget the guy's name. He works for Shearson Lehman or something, one of these establishment Wall Street.
Yes. No, he works for Morgan Stanley. You've scared his name out of me, but he's the chief economist for Morgan Stanley.
Oh, before I forget, that group you were thinking of in Germany was the Biedermeierhoff gang.
Yes, thank you, the Biedermeierhoff gang. Yeah, and it was the same thing. I mean, you know, just after that, in 86, we were living in Germany, and people were just disgusted with it. And they also were trying to claim that they were pursuing the communist ideals, revolutionary ideals. And the real communists in Germany were going, hey, it's got nothing to do with us, buddy.
Well, you know, I think the problem with some people when they try to analyze this stuff, maybe people like you and I that are policy wonks, is they don't look for different gradations of evil. You know, compared to Stalin, for instance, Khrushchev wasn't all that bad. You know, and you have to look for different gradations. As bad as the Iranians are, you got the Taliban, and then the Al-Qaeda was worse than the Taliban. You know, and it can always get worse on the extreme left or the extreme right. And I think it behooves, like you said, the radical middle to condemn both of these extremes.
Yes, I agree. And I do. I'm an equal opportunity critic here, much to the dismay of some on both sides, I suppose. But, good point, Rick. Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Good to hear from you. Okay, I gotta share with you our electile dysfunction report here. This is pretty amazing. In fact, we'll probably take a little time next hour and get into it. Specifically, the voting machines. Clint Curtis now has sworn in an affidavit, and I have the affidavit in front of me with his signature on it, notarized, or a copy of it anyway. I, Clint Curtis, swear the following is true and correct. I was born in Illinois, and I'm 46 years old, blah, blah, blah. And he talks about in early fall of 2000, a man came into this company where he worked, introduced himself as Tom Feeney. This guy was the future Speaker of the House of Representatives in Florida. He was also the attorney and lobbyist for the company for which Clint Curtis worked. He hired, I won't put words in his mouth. He says, I sat in meetings with Mr. Feeney on at least a dozen occasions over the next several months, and we discussed several potential projects to determine their viability. In short, I was the technology advisor to Mr. Feeney on these proposals. During the course of meeting in late September, October of 2000, at YEI, there were four people present, including myself. He goes through the list. And he says, Mr. Feeney said he wanted to know if YEI, the company, could develop a prototype of a voting program that would alter the vote tabulation in an election and be undetectable. He was very specific in the design and specifications required for this program. He detailed in his own words that A, the program needed to be touchscreen compatible, B, the user should be able to trigger the program without any additional equipment, C, the programming to accomplish this remain hidden, even if the source code was inspected. To make a long story short, Clint Curtis swears in this affidavit that he developed that software and delivered it in time for the 2000 vote. I'll share some more details with you about this after the break. So this is Is this the smoking gun, or is this just some guy, you know, some nutcase? I'm not really sure, but it is, well, I'll tell you right after.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international group of scientists say amphibians around the world are in serious trouble. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People have been talking for years about problems that are hitting frogs and other types of amphibians. A group of 500 scientists recently issued a report on the status of these animals after reviewing research from all corners of the globe. They say the outlook is grim. There are more than 5,700 different species of amphibians, and more than 1,800 of them are headed toward extinction. Simon Stewart directed the project, and he says the results were worse than he ever imagined.
When we started this process to do the global amphibian assessment 3.5 years ago, we never dreamt that the situation would be this bad. Not only is it bad with nearly a third of the species at risk of extinction in the world, but also there are a number of species that are deteriorating very rapidly. 435 species that are in very rapid decline around the world. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a very grim picture.
Stewart is a biologist who works for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. He says amphibians are particularly sensitive creatures. They have permeable skin, so they quickly suffer from exposure to chemicals in their surroundings. And Stewart says many species are adapted to small geographic areas. They can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed or if the climate starts to change. The scientific report is called the Global Amphibian Assessment. A news release about it was issued in October, and Stewart says it drew a lot of attention. He says that's one small piece of good news.
The worldwide coverage of this story has just blown our minds, and the desire that people have to learn more about it suggests that more people care than we might think.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, apparently the Nowhere Man is a whole lot of voters. This guy developed this software, he claims, that would automatically and undetectably run on a touchscreen, no paper receipt voting machine. And you could, and it would periodically check. And if a candidate that was supposed to lose was ahead, it would simply change the votes in the total of the machine in a way that was undetectable. And this apparently, according to this affidavit, was done at the request of Jeb Bush's 1994 running mate, Representative Tom Feeney, who then became Speaker of the House of Representatives in Florida, the guy who said that in 2002, this is the House that said that even if Al Gore won Florida, they were going to send Republican electors to Washington, D.C., and then in 2002 was elected to the House of Representatives and is now a member of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. And if there is any truth to this story at all, and from everything I've been able to see, it looks pretty solid. We're trying to track this guy down and get him on the program. And going to pursue this a little farther, but this could be the story of the decade. This could absolutely blow it out. I'll share with you all the details of this in the next hour of the program. It's because there's just more to it than I can handle in 2 minutes. Plus, Glenn in Tulsa's on the line. Hey, Glenn, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. God, this is like the death of a thousand cuts, isn't it? Every time you turn around, there's something new.
It's like, like my old friend of mine used to say, like being pecked to death by baby ducks.
Yeah, yeah. I'm watching the news last night, and I see, oh, new deal. Clear Channel links up with Fox News to provide their news programming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and the hair stands up on the back of my neck. I thought, oh, boy, now we're going to be teaching more of this, one-sided news.
Yeah, I was disappointed by that, but
so
it's legal. It's legal. That's the point. I really think it's the same thing with Walmart. We can't be criticizing the companies. We have to be criticizing the system. The system that because what's happening is that these companies are simply doing the things that they legally can do, that operate in their best interest, that return the greatest return to their stockholders. Even if it means, manipulating the political system in the United States for their profit. And it's just not a good thing. Glenn, thanks.
Get in there and fight fire with fire.
There you go. There you go. Well, we got to just tell the truth. As much as we can, as often as we can. Tag, you're it! And you tell the truth to somebody else. I mean, that's where it all comes to, ultimately. Always. It always boils down. Tom Hartman here. Where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. Regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231-198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers, 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DowPod report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50% to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
George W. likes to live in his own world. In fact, being Bush seems like a joyful, almost dreamlike experience. Reality, for example, never intrudes into his consciousness. And his lies, even as big as whoppers, seem most sincerely to be believed by him. I have no doubt that he thinks he served in the National Guard, for example. For his second term, George is drawing his world even tighter, moving swiftly to eliminate advisors and officials who might tell him things he doesn't want to hear, further shielding him from bothersome realities in the world. Colin Powell was quickly ushered out the door, even though he had dutifully and unwittingly lied for Bush about those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Powell was always questioning the blind rush into the war, so George has now plucked this irritant from his administration. Condi Rice, his worshipful national security advisor, has been moved into Powell's chair, and Bush can certainly trust that she won't disturb his consciousness with anything that goes against his neocon ideology. Likewise, his longtime legal lackey, Al Gonzalez, has been dispatched to head the Justice Department, where he can grind out memos to rationalize and legalize any little old thing that strikes George's noggin. Al, you might remember, is the guy who wrote the White House memo saying that torturing Iraqi prisoners was legally okie-dokie. Then there's the CIA, which kept sending intelligence reports to the White House warning that the Iraqi invasion and occupation would have messy consequences. George didn't like to hear that, so now he's put political hack Porter Goss at the CIA helm. Goss is purging top agents who have disagreed with Bush's disastrous policies, warning all CIA employees that their job is to, quote, support the administration and its policies in our work. This is Jim Hightower saying, there. Don't you feel better knowing that George won't be bothered by any unwanted advice or unpleasant reports?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. It's the second hour of our Tuesday show. And we've started this regular feature of doing an NLP training program, neuro-linguistic programming, how to use the tools of brilliant communicators to transform politics. And I just wanted to let you know that today's lesson is going to be held tomorrow at this time. We're still fine-tuning it a little bit. I really want this to just be as good as it can possibly get, and there's just a little bit more work I want to do on it before I share it with you. But I'll give you a little taste. The person who first introduced me to NLP, a fellow by the name of Charles Ehrenpreis, was a psychologist that we had hired for back in 78 when I was the executive director of a residential community for a residential treatment center for abused and emotionally disturbed kids. Called the New England Salem Children's Trust. It's still there in New Hampshire and a fine charity if you're looking for one on this holiday season. But this was 26 years ago. Charles had gotten his PhD in math first at Yale University and taught math at Yale, and then went back and got a PhD in psychology or social science or something like that, and ended up as a psychologist. And he had come up with what he called Ehrenpreis's law of requisite diversity. And it really mirrors one of the presuppositions of NLP. And his law of requisite diversity was that over time, in a closed system, and ultimately the planet is a closed system, but over time in a closed system, the component of that system that controls the greatest range of potential behaviors will eventually control the system. And you say, what? In other words, here's how that translates into politics. The reason that Bill Clinton was such a successful politician was that when he was with African American folks, they felt that he really understood their worldview. His skin wasn't dark, but they got the sense that he knew what it felt like to have dark skin. He had hung out enough in small towns in the South. He grew up in a small town in the South. He knew. So, in other words, he was with blacks. They felt like he was one of them. When Bill Clinton hung out with wealthy industrialists, They felt he was one of them. When Clinton hung out with professional politicians, they felt like he was one of them. When, in other words, he was able, as Paul said, and as I recall his letter to, what was it, the Romans or the Ephesians? It's, in any case, St. Paul made the comment, I have become all things to all men. And it's not about creating a phony sense of, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing, but rather being able to adapt, to change, and to have multiple ways of seeing, understanding, hearing, feeling, sensing, and sharing your perception of the world with others. In other words, the most flexible person, the person who controls the greatest range of behaviors, will eventually control the system. This is one of the keys of leadership. It's one of the keys of management. And it's certainly one of the keys of good communication. Darren Price's law of requisite diversity. And it applies, by the way, in biological systems, it applies in mathematical systems, it applies in chemical systems, it applies in human systems. So I just want to share that with you as a little tease for tomorrow. We're going to have our NLP class tomorrow, though, instead of this afternoon. I've got a bunch of other things here that I want to talk to you about today as well. But also kind of stepping off on that topic, on that theme, one of the major places where I have personally applied what I learned about neurolinguistic programming and how it works, and of course the core, one of the core principles of it being framing, is in the area of attention deficit disorder. I don't know if you saw the program Sunday night, 60 Minutes, where they were talking about adult ADHD. They actually interviewed a good friend of mine, Ned Halliwell. He wrote the foreword to my book, Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception, and wrote a blurb for my most recent book on ADHD, which just came out this last year. It's called The Edison Gene. And Ned is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard University, associate professor of psychiatry, and a psychiatrist in private practice, and the author of a book called Driven to Distraction, which is one of the better books on adult ADHD, as well as some wonderful recent books about anxiety and worry and resilience and other things. Ned's just an all-around Renaissance man. And he will be the first to tell you that he has ADD. In fact, he was one of the first to come out about it a decade ago, back when everybody was trying to say, oh, what, me? So I reframed this. I looked at this and I said, okay, this was back 10 years ago. It was actually 25 years ago when we were running this community for abused kids, and I got it that there was something different about the kids who came in to our program with this label of hyperactivity or hyperkinesis. It was the majority of the kids who came into the program, actually. In fact, I frankly, in the first year or so, I can't remember one kid who didn't come in with that as one of many diagnoses. They didn't call it ADHD back then. It was called hyperkinesis, the hyperkinetic syndrome, the hyperactive syndrome, minimal brain damage, minimal brain dysfunction. MBD was the acronym that was used back then. There was no pharmaceutical cure for it. They were experimenting with using Ritalin for it. And Dr. Ben Feingold had come up with this idea that it was food additives. And I flew out to San Francisco and met with Ben Feingold. His book, Why Your Child is Hyperactive, had been published in 1977. And this was 1978 that I was running this program. And I got to know Ben Feingold, and we did a study in our program on his diet. And to this day, our program, the program in New Hampshire, continues to have a all-natural foods diet, you know, for the kids. But what we found was that Feingold's hypothesis that salicylate-based food additives were what were triggering these kids was not always the case. In fact, it was not usually the case. So we had one kid that we could flip on and off like a light switch with salicylate-based food additives. The rest of them didn't seem to make a big difference. Although nutrition, I think, is just an important thing in general. But it seemed to me that these kids were just basically, by and large, born this way and then wounded by the experience of trying to fit into public schools that weren't designed for kids wired like this. And the reason that this was so obvious to me was because I was one of them. When I was a kid, I remember in the second grade, Mrs. Clark, my second grade teacher, saying, you know, hey, Tommy, a fish wouldn't get caught if it kept its mouth shut. You know, because I was always interrupting in class. Or an empty wagon always rattles. And she was a wonderful teacher. She was a wonderful teacher. She's the one, she and my mother, you know, just got me completely addicted to reading. My mother really gets the majority of the credit, but Mrs. Clark was a great teacher. But she just didn't know what to do with this hyperactive kid, me. And so the conclusion that I came to was that this wasn't a disease or an illness or somebody being broken. It was simply another way of being in the world. And in fact, as I grew older, a lot of the people that I knew who were entrepreneurs, who were in the media, who were actors, I worked in radio for a decade in the 70s, the late 60s through the early 70s. A lot of people in the media, particularly investigative reporters, a lot of the writers I knew, journalists, people who were drawn to high adrenaline professions, emergency medical technicians, ER surgeons, seemed to have this set of qualities called ADHD. And I came up with this theory that what was really going on was that historically there had been two types of societies. This is before industrial society. There had been two types of societies. There were hunting-gathering societies, and there were agricultural societies, going back thousands, tens of thousands of years. And in a hunting-gathering society, these three primary characteristics of ADHD, impulsivity, distractibility, and a need for high levels of stimulation, that these three characteristics, this three-cornered stool for the diagnosis of ADHD, would actually be useful. If you're walking through the forest looking for something to eat and you don't see anything to eat, you need to scan more aggressively. You need to be noticing everything around you. Well, that's what kids do in classrooms, and it's called distractibility. They're noticing everything around them. Well, in the forest or the jungle or the savannah, it would guarantee that you would spot that flash of light over there that's a rabbit that's going to be your lunch, or that flash of light over there that's a bear that wants to make you its lunch. In either case, you'd get your lunch and you'd survive. Distractibility as a survival skill. Impulsivity was the second one. Hey, if you're running through the forest chasing a rabbit, let's say, and a deer goes running by, you don't have time to pull out a pad to pen and say, well, let's sit down and do a good, careful analysis here. We'll draw a line down the middle, put rabbit on the left and deer on the right. Now, let's see. Rabbit, easier to catch, but he's got less meat. The deer is harder to catch, but there's a lot more. And, you know, by the time you had thought the process through, they'd both gone. So what would you have to do? You would have to change your behavior so quickly you didn't even realize you'd thought about it. In psychological terms, this is called behavior precedes cognition. In other words, you act before you think. This is the dictionary definition of impulsivity. Again, it would be a survival skill for hunter-gatherer people. And similarly, the person who wakes up in the morning says, you know, it sounds like, you know, fun today. It sounds like fun to go out there where there's things that want to eat me as much as I want to eat them and find lunch. That sounds like fun. That kind of person would be highly adaptive. They would succeed in a hunting-gathering society where somebody who says, oh, I don't know, there's lions and tigers and bears out there. I think I'll just stay in the cave until they go away. That person would starve. And, of course, in an agricultural society, it was the exact opposite. You don't want distractible people. You want people who will focus on, let's pick these bugs off these plants hour after hour after hour, week after week, month after month, year after year, generation after generation. Very focused. Not impulsive, not distractible, not making quick decisions. The growing season is, you know, 9 months to a year. Very careful, very thoughtful, very methodical, and they don't like to take risks. They don't need a lot of stimulation. In fact, you don't want them to be wired in a way that they want stimulation. Instead, you want them to stay on this boring farm for the rest of their lives. So all the hunters I hypothesized, in Europe got up and moved to the East Coast, and then those who were still bored moved to the Midwest, and then those who were still bored moved to the Rockies, and those who were still bored moved to the West Coast, and then they started to accumulate because the ocean was there, and therefore we have Hollywood. So anyhow, that was the theory that I laid out. Well, an interesting story in today's news I will share with you right after this. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're listening to the True People's Radio.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Everyone's favorite thieves are back.
We need a high-paying job.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah.
And they're doing a number on Europe.
We need to catch the Americans.
Mr. Ocean is the best.
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts.
That is making me a master thief.
Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film.
I'm freaking out.
Rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Now playing.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm going crazy. I live every day, and everything I wanted is
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And is that song about George Bush? I don't think so. I don't know. Anyhow, welcome back. Let's take a. I want to continue with this story about attention deficit disorder because I think this is a really important point. I've got a great story to tell you and some startling new information in today's news. But first, Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with our daily report from Washington, D.C. about what's happening in our nation's capital. So let's redirect our attention for just a moment to politics and governance and all those kind of things. Hey, Victoria, welcome to the program.
Hey.
So what's going on?
Well, so I'm sure you've been talking about they are getting ready to pass the intelligence reform bill.
Here's the question. I predicted yesterday that it would be passed as a result of a compromise because Bush can't afford the loss of prestige. But has anybody actually read the bill yet?
Oh, I shouldn't think so.
My understanding was, as of 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, it had not yet even been distributed.
No, I'm sure that's the case. I mean, maybe it's been distributed now. But in terms of reading it, I shouldn't think so. I mean, it's lengthy. And, of course, they had that big congressional party at the White House to go to last night, so that would have cut into their reading time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'll read bits. They'll read the bits they need to. They're going to have their staffers read it.
Yeah.
The same staffers who either inserted or didn't insert the bit into the into the bill about IRS people being, you know, about the Congress being able to have a look at our...
Yeah, into the omnibus spending bill. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a bit concerning. Yeah. But it looks like, for all the reasons that you've mentioned, that it's going to pass. Everybody's saying that they got what they wanted, which, you know, is really not true. But everyone wants to save face.
I understand also, Victoria, that there is a provision in this bill that is basically Patriot Act 2, that it creates an agency within the agency that oversees the extent to which our civil liberties may be infringed on a moment-to-moment basis, depending on the severity of the threat level, and allows for a kind of a sliding scale up or down, moment-to-moment reduction of civil liberties based on the determination of the president and the head of Homeland Security Department. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I've heard that that is in there, and it's a fascinating notion simply because if it's on a sliding scale and at some point you want to take exception to it, they can always turn around and say, well, at that point it was justified to do X, Y, and Z. My understanding is that this panel will have very little power and that it will be appointed by the president anyway.
Yeah.
So in terms of any independence it might have or any ability to monitor things, it'll have almost nothing.
This is more and more seeming to me like the German Enabling Acts. I mean, it just is spooky. So, anyhow, we'll see.
It's very disturbing.
Yeah, yeah. So what else is going on in Washington?
Well, that's the main thing. The other thing that there is buzz about is the CIA memo, which I'm sure you've also been talking about, that was leaked to the New York Times, which is the Baghdad chief, the Baghdad station chief, who apparently is about to leave Iraq after his time there, saying that things are going to get worse before they get better. Which I think most politicians, people like Senator Joe Biden, others who've spent time there would agree with,
yeah.
But not exactly what the Pentagon wanted to have said, and certainly not what they've been saying over the past few days.
Yeah, no, I didn't have that. What I have is the leaked Pentagon memo saying that we've lost all credibility in the Arab world, that the Sydney Morning Herald was playing with. I must have missed that the CIA memo this morning. We'll dig it out during the break.
So they're all leaking today.
Yeah, I guess. And they're all saying the same thing. It's a mess. It's an absolute
mess. It's a mess.
George Bush has really blown it. He has frankly, stupid and irresponsible actions have led to the death of hundreds of thousands of people, at least 100,000 people, and including well over 1,000 of our young men and women, and not to mention all those who have lost limbs and eyes and ears and everything else. And it's an absolute, absolute tragedy. Absolute tragedy. Victoria, thanks so much for the report today.
Thank you very much.
Always great to hear from the Talk Radio News Service folks there. Okay, talk to you soon. Talk to you tomorrow, in fact. 29 minutes past the hour. Integrity and passion in broadcasting truth. Tom Hartman here with you. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. Regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231-198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DalPob report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50% to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Here's the story the CIA cable, the Victoria, just alerted us to. 2 classified reports sent late last month, reports the Center for American Progress, by the CIA station chief in Baghdad present a bleak assessment on matters of politics, economics, and security in Iraq, warning the situation, quoting from the report, is deteriorating and may not rebound anytime soon, end quote. That's even worse than it's going to get worse before it gets better. The documents obtained by the New York Times said the security situation was likely to get worse, including more violence and sectarian clashes, unless there were marked improvements soon on the part of the Iraqi government in terms of its ability to assert authority and build the economy. And, of course, with the neoconservative economic superstructure that we put into place with the Iraqi constitution, which we forced upon them, which allows multinational corporations basically to run the entire economy of Iraq. That ain't going to happen. That isn't going to happen. All right. The assessments were much more pessimistic than the public picture being offered by the Bush administration. At a White House event on Monday, George Bush described the insurgency as a few people in Iraq who are trying to stop the march toward democracy. Yeah. Our quote for the day, William Butler Yeats, education is more than the filling of a pail, it is also the lighting of a fire. And along with that, a nice quote from Confucius, if you plan for a year, plant rice. If your plan is for 100 years, educate your children. And here we have now this story, this news story, that America's kids are not doing all that well, shall we say, educationally. With regard to math, 15-year-olds in the United States rank near the bottom of industrialized countries in math skills, ahead only of Portugal, Mexico, and three other nations. Here's the breakdown. Above the United States is Spain, Poland, the Slovak Republic, Germany, France, Iceland, Australia, Canada, Japan, Korea, and at the top of the pile, Finland. Below us is Italy and Mexico. The U.S. actually ranked 24th among 29 countries that are members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which sponsored the study. In a wider group that included 10 non-members, many of them developing nations, the U.S. tied with Latvia for 27th place. Well, here's how this all relates. I remember when one of our children was not doing well in school, and he was 12, 13 years old, something like it, first year of middle school, as I recall. And the teachers were all freaking out and all, you know how it goes. And it was that ADD thing, right? Put him on medication. And we actually tried that for a short while. It didn't seem to do much good. And so we decided to go looking for a school for him, a better school, a better educational environment. Let's find a place where he can flourish. And we lived in Atlanta at the time, in the northern suburbs of Atlanta, Roswell. And there are a bunch of schools in Atlanta in the phone book of 20, 30 of them, something like that, that private schools, many of whom advertise that they specialize in kids with attention deficit disorder or learning disabilities. And so Louise and I went shopping. And what we found was that most people were of the opinion that because these kids were impulsive and distractible and not particularly well-structured and organized, they needed lots of discipline and structure. Let's just slap it into them. There was one school we went to where they wanted us to sign a waiver that they could use corporal punishment. Principal had a cane fishing pole, one of those bamboo canes in his office in the corner of his eye. He says, "See that stick over there?" I go, "Yeah." And he says, "Kids know it's there if you get my meaning, ha ha." And I thought, I wouldn't be able to succeed in this school. I'm not going to inflict this on my child. And what we found was that the schools that were purporting to be good places for ADHD kids ran the gamut from, on the one hand, the school from hell, to, on the other end of the spectrum, the Nazi school from hell. I mean, they were like variations on military academies and all this kind of stuff. And some of them were just outrageously expensive as well. So we ended up putting our son in a... We were looking around at different schools, and we finally had given up on all the ADD specialty schools. And we found this school in downtown Atlanta called the Horizon School, which was a leftover remnant of the Summerhill experiment in some ways, part of the alternative school movement. The Summerhill was a book by A.S. Neal, published back in the 1960s, as I recall, in which they had created a school where the kids ran the school. And this school was actually run by the student council. in everything except academics. The teachers had final say in academics, but the kids had a student council, and they ran the school, and they made all kinds of rules for themselves. It was quite remarkable. And I remember walking into this school. First of all, we sat down with the woman who ran the school, and I said, our son has ADD, and she said, I will thank, and I was at that point in time, I was in the middle of writing a book, my first book on attention deficit disorder, which came out that year. It's called Attention Deficit Disorder, Different Perception. It came out in 1992 or 93. And that book is now, you know, Time Magazine wrote it up. It's sold a 250,000 copies or something. And it's still out there. I still think it's probably one of the best books on ADD that I've written and that I think is out there, actually. And so I was in the middle of doing that, and I was real into it. And I said, you know, our son has ADD. And she got all bristly. She said, I will thank you not to use that phrase in my presence again. I said, why? She said, because we don't have labels in this school. We have individuals. I will not tolerate any individual child being slapped with a label. And I was thinking, she just doesn't get it. And she said, and furthermore, we don't want our kids coming to school medicated. And I'm thinking, he's going to eat them alive. So then I went out and walked around the school. And I remember walking into a classroom. This was seventh graders, as I recall, seventh or eighth graders. And it looked like absolute chaos. Kids were not sitting at their desk. They were standing up. They were walking around. One kid was sitting on his desk. There was a kid sitting on the teacher's desk. Kids were running up and marking things on the blackboard. The teacher was having a knockdown, drag-out argument with the kids. And I'm standing in the back of the room. And, you know, keep in mind, a decade earlier, I'd been the executive director of a program for abused kids that had a school. I was the executive director of a program that contained a school. I suppose you could say I was the principal of the school. And I'm standing in the back of the room, you know, with my arms folded across my chest, thinking, this is a classroom out of control. This would never happen in a school I ran. And you know how sometimes when you just listen for a few minutes more, all of a sudden you hear something that completely turns your world upside down, that completely changes the way that you view things. And as I stood there in this very kind of critical judging posture, I started listening to what the kids and the teacher were arguing about. What these kids were arguing with this teacher about was that Einstein had suggested in his theory of relativity, E equals MC squared, that you can't exceed the speed of light. That if you exceed the speed of light, and you can get to 0.999% of the speed of light, but if the speed of light, if the value of the speed of light becomes 1 or 1 point anything, once you hit or exceed the speed of light, then time becomes infinite and mass collapses to zero. Or is it the other way around? Time collapses to zero and mass becomes infinite. I forget which it was. I used to have memorized the time and mass dilation theories, but that was when I was a teenager. Anyway, and therefore it's impossible in the physical universe to exceed the speed of light. You can approach it, but you can't exceed it. And if that's the case, these kids were saying, then why is it that Einstein, in his own theory of relativity, his own most famous theory, said E, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. E equals MC squared. C is the speed of light. How can you square something you can't even have as a value of 1? How is that possible? How can you square something you can't exceed? That's, you know, and they're pulling out Einstein's general and specific theory of relativity, and they're talking about his story about being in the train going away from the clock tower in downtown Austria, and as the train approaches the speed of light, the hands start to slow down, and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, I got it. That all my life, I had thought that education was about pouring things into kids. Yeats's quote. The filling of a bucket. And that what they understood at that school was that education was about lighting a fire. And so we put our son in that school, and not only did he do well, but he was doing work two grade levels above his grade level. He was getting A's in senior physics as a freshman or a sophomore. He all of a sudden just caught on fire. He fell in love with learning. And all of this with no drugs. Which leads us to the question, you got a person who has a psychiatric illness in a public school that requires medication from a multi-billion dollar industry, but when you put them into an alternative school environment, not only does he not require the medication, but the disease seems to vanish and he does very well. The question is then, where is the disease? And I have firmly, solidly come to the conclusion that the disease is in our schools. It's not in our kids. And I'm a big proponent of public education. I believe in public schools. And I believe we must reform them. We must change them. And I'm here to tell you, I've done in-service training for teachers from Danville, California to Muskegon, Michigan to New York City. And I can tell you, and to Europe, I mean, I've done in-service trainings for teachers in England, in France, in Germany, in Israel, in Sydney, Australia, in Melbourne. And in Keynes, in Lockhart River, Australia, in Queensland. And I can tell you, there are the majority of teachers want it to change too. And what's happening is that because of the pressure that's coming down from these right wingers who believe that you just have to make it harder and more rigid. If it ain't working, you do more of it. You do it with greater violence, basically. It is, you know, our teachers are just absolutely having a terrible time trying to repair our broken schools. So there's that. So that's in the news today. Our kids are 27th in the world, tied with Latvia in math scores. And then the other story in the news, which I thought was particularly interesting, is that a study funded by the National Institutes of Health, or I'm sorry, the National Science Foundation, done by researchers at the University of Minnesota, has now come out. This is a peer-reviewed, solid study. Just came out and said the same thing that I said in my book in 1992, and that I nailed down the science for, by the way, in the most recent book, The Edison Gene. And that is that not only is there nothing wrong with these kids, but that they're carrying adaptive behaviors that are highly useful in some environments. Here's the story. The headline is, impulsive behavior may be relict of hunter-gatherer past. Drawing on experiments with blue jays, a team of University of Minnesota researchers has found what may be the evolutionary basis for impulsive behavior. Such behavior may have evolved because in the wild, snatching up small rewards like food morsels, rather than waiting for something bigger and better to come along, can lead to getting more rewards in the long run. This scientific study, may help explain why many modern-day humans find it so hard to turn down an immediate reward, for example, food, money, sex, or euphoria, rather than investing and waiting for a bigger reward later. The work will be published in the December 7th issue of the Proceedings of the Royal Society of Science in London. And they talk about David Stevens, professor of ecology, evolution, and behavior at the university's College of Biological Sciences, did this study with blue jays. And he says, what surprised Stevens was that the birds that went for the immediate reward were actually able to earn as much or more food in the long run as birds who were forced to wait for the larger reward or follow a mixed strategy. When they find a small bit of food, they don't wait. They just go back to foraging, and they find lots of little rewards add up to more than what they would have gotten if they'd waited around for the big reward. So that actually, in nature, in many cases, if not in most cases, certainly with blue jays, in all cases, being impulsive means you get more food, and you're more likely to, you know, pass your genes along to be successful as a blue jay. The workmate, now, that's blue jays, okay? So this guy, the scientist, David Stevens, he says, the work may apply to humans because taking rewards without hesitation may have paid off for our foraging ancestors. So here you have it. Now, also, of course, as I point out in my book, The Edison Gene, the leading geneticists in the world, including Robert Moises, one of the guys who was one of the leaders of the Human Genome Project, have come to the conclusion that ADHD is actually a positive, beneficial genetic variation, not a disease. It is a difference, and people are born with it. But it's a positive one, a useful one. It's associated with creativity. I mean, Thomas Edison was the poster child for this. Associated with creativity, ingenuity, energy, enthusiasm, relentlessness. And frankly, I think it makes pretty good talk show hosts. My own plug for ADD. I hope you think so, too. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A strike of some 500 Santa Cruz, California City employees was sidestepped for the time being last Thursday when representatives from SEIU Local 415 and city officials came to terms on a tentative agreement in their contract dispute. WIN reporter Vinny Lombardo has the details.
For City Hall groundskeepers, it was business as usual Thursday, with their contract set to expire in a day's time. While the city of Santa Cruz employs over 800 people, only about 500 workers threatened to strike. Police and firefighters are on a separate contract. According to Leslie Scanagata, chief spokesperson for SEIU Local 415, rising health care costs and low wages are the key issues on the bargaining table.
They have actually, they're receiving less take-home pay now than they were 2 years ago.
Scanagata points out that Local 415 members have twice agreed to a voluntary wage freeze to help the city get through a financial crunch and haven't had a raise since April 2002. In January, city workers are expected to absorb a 3.2% cost increase in health benefits. Santa Cruz Mayor Mike Rotkin agrees workers deserve a decent package, but with city coffers running dry, the council had no proposals for the union.
the city council, looking at our situation about a month ago, really felt like we didn't have any way to get the money. We didn't know where to get it.
A breakthrough came Thursday when the city was able to secure a one-time state grant to cover the workers' pay raise for 1 year.
That means that they will get some pay increase this year, but then next year bets will be off and we'll be back to bargaining with a difficult situation again.
Meantime, both the mayor and local 415 reps are hopeful the workers accept the deal being offered.
There's a general membership meeting that members only, they attend, and they will be voting throughout next week until Wednesday evening, and when we'll count the ballots and we'll know whether they accept it or reject it.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
So we got to have freedom for our kids in our schools as well. So that's liberal policies with regard to education. Yeah, it turns out they work better. You know, in Sweden, kids don't actually start to learn to read until they're 7 years old. They graduate from high school when they're 16, and they consistently outperform Americans right across the board. Why would that be? Well, because they have an educational system that's flexible and it works. Here's, you know, the way that our school system got started was the Horace Mann was this guy back in the late 1800s. The Germans, actually in the late 1700s, the Germans started these things called Spinnenschulens, which is where the local nobles would set up a factory to spin cloth, to spin fabric, a thread. And local children could work in them, and if they worked half a day, they would get educated half a day. And so people would send their kids to work and in exchange for education. And this eventually evolved after the Battle of Jena in 1809, I think it was, or 1806, whatever it was, early then when Napoleon kicked the butt of the Prussians. They went to Fichte, the famous German philosopher, and they said, how do we solve this problem? How do we create an army that can beat Napoleon? And he said, you stifle dissent in your schools. You create schools where different classes are taught, different topics are taught by different instructors. So you have, instead of holistic thinkers, you have linear thinkers. You have people who think in the box rather than seeing everything, you know, all at once. People no longer see the interconnection. You teach obedience. You force children to raise their hand and say, may I ask a question, before they even ask the question. So even asking a question becomes a two-step process. And Horace Mann tried to bring this to the United States. He went over there, paid his $500, got his PhD. That was the fashionable thing. And came back and started pushing this thing. And he couldn't get any communities to go for it until finally Boston, which was having this problem. The Protestants had taken over Massachusetts and taken over Boston. And the Catholics were rising up in power because all these Catholics had come over from the potato famine. And they wanted to break the back of the Catholic community. So the city fathers in Massachusetts said, okay, we'll try it. We'll institute public education. And it's based on the model of a factory, running kids along an assembly line, and those that don't fit get pushed off the belt. And, you know, according to Horace Mann, it was a great idea to educate a class of kids who would make good factory workers, and arguably it was, but we don't need good factory workers anymore. We need holistic thinkers. It's time for us to be reforming our educational system. And this bunch, The right-wingers are working absolutely against that, and it's a shame. It's a real shame.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis.
poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary-Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. I mean, regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231 to 198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers, 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DalPob report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50 to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Spam is uniquely American. This mysterious meat-like concoction in a pull-tab can is a made-in-the-USA icon of American marketing, produced by Hormel Foods in Minnesota. I happen to love Spam, and no, I don't want to know what's in it. I subsisted on fried Spam sandwiches to get me through college, and I've even been a tasting judge of the sometimes startling Spam concoctions prepared for the renowned Spamorama contest held in my town of Austin, Texas for the past 26 years. But I was stunned, and not a little hurt, to learn that the corporate purveyors of Spam are now trying to hide the Americanism of this potted meat delicacy. It seems that Hormel is concerned that its Spam sales could be hurt in England because of the Brits' rather intense opposition to George W.'s war in Iraq. Indeed, a poll finds that 20% of consumers in Britain, Japan, and elsewhere say they'll shun such identifiably American products as Spam, Marlboro, and Starbucks to protest Bush's my way or the highway approach to the rest of the world. To counter this possibility, Hormel has launched a $3.7 million marketing blitz in England in an effort to position Spam as quintessentially British. The ads, featuring typical Brits, portray Spam as a longtime part of the British culture, as though it's a homegrown product with no connection to that place across the pond. Hormel has even anglicized the Spamorama Festival. The Spam Chippy of the Year Award is presented to the British fish and chip shop that makes the best dish from this pink meat stuff. They also named the Spam Chef of the Year in England, a culinary honor that was recently won by a chap who makes Spam wontons. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Hormel, stop hiding your beautiful pink piece of Americana under a British bushel. You should strut your stuff as one of the good things from America. Instead of Bush's gunboat diplomacy, show the world Spam diplomacy.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on stations from coast to coast. On the Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Cable Radio Network, bringing us into cable systems and homes in 29 states. Tommy Thompson offers terrorists helpful food contamination tips, reports Andy Borowitz. Apologizes for incomplete food tampering advice. My bad, said Tommy Thompson. That was the message today from outgoing Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson, who said that his statement last week that terrorists could easily contaminate the nation's food supply lacked specific instructions as to how such a terrorist plot could be hatched. In his resignation speech last week, Mr. Thompson said, for the life of me, I cannot understand why the terrorists have not attacked our food supply because it's so easy to do. A statement which Mr. Thompson today called woefully incomplete. Thompson said, it's one thing to say that contaminating the nation's food supply is easy to do, another thing to explain exactly how to do it. In order to help terrorists learn precisely how to taint America's food supply, Mr. Thompson said, helpful food contamination tips will be posted online at the Health and Human Services Department website. He went on to say, quote, any terrorist madman wanting to contaminate our food supply just needs to click on over to www.hhhs.gov/food contamination tips. But within hours of Mr. Thompson's speech, international terror mastermind Osama bin Laden issued a new tape complaining that he had tried to click on the food contamination link and had been directed to a page reading under construction. Mr. Thompson immediately apologized to the international terror community for the non-functioning food contamination webpage. He said, getting a new webpage up on the Internet is not an easy thing to do. It's certainly not as easy as attacking the nation's food supply. Thanks to Andy Borowitz for that.
Our phone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. The website, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room or our message board. 1-866-889-8894. And in fact, Alan in Texas is on the line. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I was wondering how the East India Tea Company put so many companies out of business if all they sold was tea.
They didn't. They had major monopolies on virtually every product that was imported into the United States, and they owned most of the ships as well, which would be the equivalent of owning the retail stores these days, because they were the only way to get into the country. The Mayflower, the Pilgrims, was rented from the East India Company. The East India Company was the organization that started Jamestown. It started the state of Maryland. Virtually all of the governors of the original 13 colonies were also agents, at least before the Revolution. For example, Ben Franklin's son, who was the governor of New Jersey, he had to leave after the Revolution because his son, I'm forgetting his name right now, but anyhow, his son refused to go along the Revolution. He was a loyalist, so he went to England after the Revolution. But he was not only the governor of New Jersey, he was also the East India Company's agent in New Jersey. So in most of the states prior to the Revolution, the East India Company's offices, their agents, were also the people who were the governors.
So they were similar to the Walmart at that time.
Well, yeah, even bigger and worse in some regards. They controlled so much of the commerce in the United States, and also they had so much sway in Parliament. That was the thing that the colonists were really flipped out about. The Tea Act of 1773, which is what led to the Boston Tea Party. Most people think it was a tax increase. Now, there was a tax increase that preceded that. The French and Indian Wars, which had been fought in the 1760s and early 1770s, as I recall, they wrapped up in 1770 or 1771. This was like 6 years before the Declaration of Independence. Those wars were England fighting against France and their Indian allies for territory, and the colonists were on the side of the British. You know, they saw themselves as English citizens. And those wars were very expensive, and so England said, you know, we got to pay for these wars. So they passed this thing called the Stamp Act, where pretty much any piece of paper that was used for anything in the United States had to have a tax stamp on it. And that produced quite a bit of rebellion in the United States, which led to the Boston Massacre, some would suggest. And Ben Franklin went before the closest advisors to King George III and argued against that and got it rescinded. That was in 1772, as I recall. And then the next year, England passed the Tea Act. Now, most people look back in history and they think that the Tea Act was another tax. Actually, it was the opposite. The Tea Act was very different. The Tea Act was a tax cut on imported tea into the United States that was specifically targeted to the East India Company. In fact, they gave the East India Company the equivalent of what in today's dollars would be about a $300 or $400 million tax rebate. So that the East India Company could wipe out all the small importers of tea into the United States. And that's why the colonists refused to let the East India Company's ships land in the five ports that they were coming into, Charleston and Providence and New York and Boston and Philadelphia. And in Boston and in all the other cities, the East India Company ships actually never made it into port. They succeeded in keeping them out. But in Boston, they actually landed a ship, and that provoked these guys, 150 guys dressing up like Indians and going on the ships and vandalizing what was, in today's dollars, $1 million worth of tea. And that, of course, then led to the British to what was called the Boston Port Act, where they said until the colonists paid $1 million to the East India Company in reparation for that lost tea, that there could not be any commerce. No ships could go in or out of the port of Boston. And that led directly to the American Revolution. So,
okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess all this is in your book, Unequal Protection.
Yeah, it is. It's also in What Would Jefferson Do? And it's just a fascinating story, and one that it's a shame that they don't teach so much in our schools anymore. You know, it's the true history of the United States. It's gotten lost. It's gotten lost. I think it's important for all of us to revive it and be sharing it with folks. Alan, thanks for the call. And thanks for giving
Thank
me
you.
A chance to go off half-cocked on one of my favorite topics there. 1-866-889-8894. Did you see where Bush has kicked out Mary Frances Berry from the Civil Rights Commission? She was appointed by Jimmy Carter, and she has taken off on every president since then. She was not a a friend to any of them, pointing out when they screwed up or when, you know, things, policies were not working in favor of the African-American community. But she really gained the ire of George Bush 4 years ago when she criticized Jeb Bush for stealing the vote in Florida by not allowing some 80 or 90,000 African-Americans in Florida to vote because they had he had created this phony felons list and taken their name off the voting list, and she therefore he stole the election in Florida, you know, and she pointed that out loudly, and many folks in the civil rights community consider her a hero. And her term is not supposed to end until the 21st of January. That's, you know, the annual appointment time. That's, you know, a month, more than a month from now, month and a couple of weeks. But George Bush basically fired her yesterday. And she's very upset about it. A lot of people are upset about it. And he's replacing her with this guy, Reynolds, who is the Assistant General Counsel for Great Plains Energy in Kansas City, Missouri. Another energy industry executive. I don't think he's going to get many objections from this guy. Phil in Tampa, Florida, is on the line. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I'm a teacher, and I have to agree with what you're talking about, especially here in Florida, where the elementary schools here have as many as 1,000 children, kinder through fifth grade, and they're run basically like low-security prisons.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing. They are run like factories. I'm sitting back here just getting a neck ache from nodding yes.
Yeah.
All the things you're saying.
It's a real tragedy. This is what we were talking about in the last hour of the state of education in the United States. It's like the kids are on this conveyor belt, you know.
Yeah.
And if they're the standardized product, you know,
right,
then they make it all the way through. But if they're not a standardized product, then they get pushed off the conveyor belt and dropped into this bucket, this trash bucket that we call special education.
Right.
And the result is that some of our most brilliant and talented kids fall through the cracks or get just crushed. I mean, and it's emotionally devastating to them, and it wounds them for the rest of their lives. And you know, Thomas Edison's mother would not put up with this. When his school teacher, when he was in the second grade, his school teacher brought her in and told her that her son was disruptive and, you know, a bad student. She told him where he could put it in no uncertain terms, and she homeschooled him. And, you know, there's a huge movement in the United States for this. And at the same time, it's really interesting. The homeschooling movement, the private school movement are growing. And in the public schools, the National Education Association and many of the teachers that I know, the teachers' unions, are just begging for the opportunity to have the power at a local level to reform the schools and make them work. And instead, at a national level, you've got the conservatives saying, no, what we've got to do is support these large corporations who manufacture and sell tests and who make big contributions to the Republican Party, which is what the No Child Left Behind bill was all about. It turned a $400 million a year industry into a $2 billion a year industry in 1 year, and, you know, the testing industry. And then you've got all these conservatives, so-called, basically religious conservatives, getting themselves elected to school boards and saying, and not only do we have to keep doing things the way we've always done them and spare the rod, spoil the child, and all this other nonsense, but we've also even got to strip science out of the schools. You know, it's just another theory, this evolution stuff and all this. And everybody's got an agenda, and my agenda is, why don't we just teach kids in a way that allows them to learn?
Well, one of the things that, you know, one of the things that children need to learn is how to get along and make friends, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
In an unstructured environment. And one of the things that Jeb and the boys have done is there is no recess for children in Florida.
You're kidding.
No.
You're a teacher. No, you're a teacher in Florida, and they've canceled recess.
There is no recess. You have PE maybe 2-3 times a week, you know, for an hour.
Yeah.
With the coach, and that's it. There is no recess.
And so, and kids after school more often than not are just going home and sitting in front of the TV and vegging out. Where are their social skills coming from? They're not.
That's my point.
Yeah.
The other thing that's going on right now, because I'm in contact with, I used to teach in California, I'm in contact with teachers there, is back in the mid-90s or so, there was a constitutional amendment that the public voted for that passed to limit class size from from what it was to 20 to 1 in kinder, first, second, and third grade.
Yeah.
Well, under Herr Arnold, class size has gone up to 33 in kindergarten.
Yeah, and that's, see, in my opinion, in my experience, and I'm also the chairman of the board of directors of the Hunter School in New Hampshire, which is a school specifically for ADHD kids, and we have some classes where we have a 4-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio. I mean, you can demonstrate that the lower the student-to-teacher ratio, that is the fewer kids you have in a classroom, the more likely it is that those kids are going to learn.
Well,
and,
of course.
And, you know, it's just very simple.
Of course, but the thing is this. That he's doing all kinds of negative things related to education, health care. There was supposed to be a nurse-patient ratio.
Yeah.
He's killed that. But he's great in the PR.
Yeah. Well, that's the cons. I mean, you know, they know how to speak. They know how to talk. You know, Clear Skies Initiative, Leave No Child Behind. They have master and Orwellian doublespeak. So that people think that they're doing the right thing. And then behind the scenes, they're tearing apart the fabric of our society. Thanks for the call, Phil. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please hang up.
Having a hard time connecting with someone who cares? Try the Boys Town National Hotline at 1-800-448-3000. They'll be there to help you when you need it the most, 24 hours a day. They'll even pay for the call. Simply call 1-800-448-3000.
Boys Town National Hotline, how can I help?
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we want to give up.
But you don't. You just don't. You just keep on going. Did you see where Tom DeLay, by the way? Maybe Tom DeLay should give up. He may have violated House rules by accepting donations from three lobbyists for his legal defense fund. Here he is. He may be being prosecuted for accepting inappropriate contributions, and so he puts together a legal defense fund and takes inappropriate contributions. Good old Tom DeLay. He's just a laugh a minute, that guy. He's probably one of the most corrupt criminal politicians that we've had in Washington, D.C. since Albert Fall and the Teapot Dome scandal. Steve in Atlanta on the line. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, love the show.
Thank you.
I want to talk about education. One thing you mentioned, and you and the caller actually talked about a couple of points I was about to say just before the break, but you said that you know, the right-wingers are, you know, kind of destroying the you know, education. I agree with that. Don't get me wrong. But one of the things I want to point out that I haven't heard you say is, and I believe it's a liberal concept, and this has to go, is the idea of social promotion.
Social promotion, what does that mean?
The way I understand it is where, you know, kids just go on to the next grade regardless of whether or not they pass the academic standards, you know, whether or not they pass the class.
Oh, yeah, so that they're not emotionally injured by being older kids in a class
full of
younger people.
Exactly, and watching my wife teach, you know, she teaches down at Forest Park.
Yeah.
That's a subdivision down here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, watching her teach, you know, she taught high school English. She'd have 20 kids, you know. You know, a third of them are reading at fourth, fifth grade level. A third of them are reading, you know, pretty advanced. And a third of them are kind of the middle of the road. How you got to teach that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And I have to say, Steve, I don't know any liberal who would defend a policy that doesn't produce good educational results. I mean, I know
this is true. I mean,
all the cons and all the right-wing talk show hosts and all these guys try to say this is what liberals are all about. Nine times out of ten, they're just lying.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, I just the way I gathered is some sort of grassroots effort or, you know, local. The problem is it's local parents and local people trying to take control, trying to tell the teachers what to do.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest problems we have is we need to get teachers back in power.
Yeah, and we need to get local communities involved, and we need to get parents involved, and we need
sure.
to get you know more PTA involvement, and we need to reduce class sizes, and I mean there's a bunch of things that really and truly need to be done here, and we're seeing now that this great experiment with charter schools, and which I was frankly very optimistic about. I did in-service trainings for at least a dozen charter schools in the late 90s. When I was running around doing, you know, training school teachers, and now we're finding that the charter schools are not performing as well as public schools,
right.
and it's becoming increasingly clear that there's really a hidden agenda here, and the hidden agenda is break the back of the teachers' union because they're unionized. So there's that economic agenda, you know, let's just get rid of, you know, the anti-union agenda, which is never discussed, but it's real high on the conservative list. And, you know, let's standardize education. Let's say one size fits all, which is just crazy.
Right. It does not work with education. I mean, you know, all these conservatives want to hold teachers accountable, and I have yet to hear a good way to do it.
Yeah. Well, the way that you hold them accountable is you have them answerable to the local community, and that requires parents getting involved with PTAs and on the school boards. And unfortunately, and this is one of the tragedies of our culture, so few people are getting politically active. The only people who are showing up to run for the school board are those who are passionately driven by something like, you know, wanting to teach creationism instead of evolution. And, you know, we need people who are just concerned about the fact that this is our community, regardless of whether they're Republican Republican or Democrats, people who want to see good education being on the school boards. And we need parents showing up for PTA meetings. And one of the big problems, again, gets back to this thing that because of conservative economics now, you've got most families, both parents are working. Who's got the time to show up
a
PTA meeting? I mean, without good union jobs, nobody can show up. We've got, it's just this dog chasing his tail kind of, or spiral down the drain, actually, is probably a better metaphor, situation that's just getting worse and worse and worse. And it's going to require something to break it. Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You know, I was once in a vault while I was being robbed.
This December, the only thing riskier than stealing $160 million is having to pay it back.
With interest.
It just hurts.
What we do know is we need a high-paying job.
George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts. Ocean's 12, a Steven Soderbergh film, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13 for language. Starts December 10th.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
This weekend, U.S. Labor Against the War held their first post-election assembly meeting in Chicago. 80 organizations with ties to labor voted that U.S. Labor Against the War should continue work to stop the war in Iraq and bring troops home. Nancy Lesson is a co-founder of Military Families Speak Out. Here she reads a letter from a Marine mom explaining why she opposes the war in Iraq.
I feel like a mother lion in a cage, my grown cub in danger, and all I can do is throw myself furiously against the bars, impotent to protect him. My tolerance for bullshit is zero, and I've snapped off more heads in the last several months than in all my 48 years combined.
Eric Gill, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here Local 5 in Hawaii, traveled the farthest to attend the assembly meeting. He told the Workers' Independent News why it was important for his local to take a position on war.
We're the hotel industry, and wars are bad for us. We get laid off. Regardless of any view on imperialism and whether or not this war is a just war or whether or not we were lied to and all that, war is just plain bad for business.
The curtain rose this week on the 18th Annual International Confederation of Free Trade Unions Conference in Miyazaki, Japan. For the first time ever, Iraqi trade unionists are in attendance. Since the fall of Saddam's regime, at least 10 independent trade unions have been set up in Iraq. The ICFTU has set up a training program in Jordan to help rekindle the once strong Iraqi labor movement. The Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions faces many challenges, though, including occupation. U.S. forces arrested 8 members of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions last year for staging a peaceful rally against the occupation. A strike could start at any time for the 700 workers at Malden Mills. Union members there voted 231-198 to authorize a strike. At issue are higher health insurance premiums for workers, 3 times what they pay now. If that strike happens, it would be the first in the union's history at Malden Mills. Unite Here in Lawrence, Massachusetts represents the workers. Union reps and company officials are meeting today in one more effort to avoid a strike. GE Commercial Finance owns Malden Mills after a 2001 bankruptcy. Here's today's DalPob report. Walmart by the numbers. Hundreds of thousands of Walmart workers make less than $7.50 an hour. The average on-the-clock work week at Walmart is 32 hours, and since Walmart defines that as part-time work, workers there must wait 2 years before being eligible for health benefits. Once Walmart workers are getting health insurance benefits, they must pay an average of 1/5 of their paychecks as co-payments for their health insurance policies. Turnover rates at America's largest private employer range from 50% to 100%, meaning few workers there ever see true health benefits.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
What was it you wanted? Tell me again so I know. What's happening in there? What's going on in your show? What was it you wanted?
Did you see that interview with Bob Dylan over the weekend? What was it, on 60 Minutes, I think? quite interesting. The guy's saying, you know, I'm just a singer. I just do songs. I'm not trying to be a social commentator. And methinks Bob doth protest too much. Speaking of Bob's, time for our conservative alert for the day. Bob Novak on the Capital Gang. He was talking about the CBS memos about, Dan Rather's story on George W. Bush not serving his time in the National Guard. And he says,
I'd like CBS at this point to say where they got those documents from. I think they should say where they got those documents because I thought it was a very poor job reported by CBS.
So Al Hunt says, Robert Novak, you're saying CBS should reveal its source? You think reporters ought to reveal sources? And, of course, you will recall Robert Novak was the one who released the Valerie Plame story.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Who committed treason. And Bob Novak clearly, in my mind, broke the law, committed a felony. Strangely, they have Judith Miller and this guy from Time Magazine. They're threatening them with jail, but not Bob Novak. So anyhow, Al Hunt says, you think reporters ought to reveal sources? Novak says, no, wait a minute. I'm just saying in that case. Yeah. Yeah, the old con strategy. Different rules for us and them, as they'd say. 1-866-889-8894. Larry in Cleveland, Ohio on the line. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, Larry. What's up?
I just wanted to thank you for your program. With all of the conservatives and neocons speaking out, it's terrible that people aren't realizing what's really going on. But one thing I called you about, I've got like maybe about three things I wanted to talk about. What do you think about pulling company charters?
I think we should be doing it. There's a big movement in California been going on for 3 or 4 years now to pull Unocal's charter because of their actions. But, you know, companies' charters were routinely pulled before the 1870s in the United States. I mean, it was just a common thing. Every year, every Secretary of State had to evaluate the performance of the companies incorporated in those states. And if the companies weren't acting in the public interest, they would simply pull their charters. The corporate death sentence is very common. And then after the charter mongering era of the 1880s, 1890s, 1900s, when Rockefeller and Carnegie and Mellon and all these guys just basically took political power and started pushing the states around, that's pretty much when it stopped. And I don't think that there's been probably 50 or 60 corporations that have lost their charters since then. And we need to go back to it. It's a powerful tool. Elliot Spitzer has threatened it in a couple of cases. I don't think he's actually done it with any cases. But pulling, for those who don't know what we're talking about here, Larry, a charter is the Articles of Incorporation. It's the legal document that allows a corporation to exist. Corporations are created at the state level. The state authorizes their existence. And pulling a charter is saying, sorry, you guys, you no longer exist. And basically what they have to do is divide up the assets, sell them off, distribute the money to the stockholders, and poof, it's gone. And they can start over again if they want, but it's gone. And I think instead we've got all these corporations that are getting hit with. I mean, Bill Frist's family company, you know, that then became a larger company. They got hit with an $800 million fine for crimes. I mean, if it was you or me, I mean, if we stuck up 7-Eleven and got $20, we'd be in jail for 5 years. These guys get an $800 million fine, and they're still walking around doing business, paying off politicians. I'd say pull their charter. You know, give them the corporate death sentence.
That's what people need to really become more active in doing, because it's just really been bad. I have a 4-year degree in information systems management. I'm having a hard time trying to find jobs that are $7.50 an hour part time.
Yeah.
And with them exploiting jobs and so forth, you know, it really ticks me off. What I've been doing is when I got called HP for support, Hewlett Packard, and I get an English speaking person and then hold the line and then they switch me over to India. It's sick. Me. I mean, I don't mind people making money. I don't mind it if you want to do the transition, but for God's sake, don't do it overnight. If you want people here to do more sophisticated things. Then you need a training program. You need a transition period to be able to do it. Okay, we're in a global economy, and I understand that.
But it goes beyond that, Larry. It goes beyond that because here's the question. I had this conversation day before yesterday with the president of one of the largest unions in the United States, and I said, you know, and he's saying, okay, what we need to do is with regard to the service economy, because there's this article on the front page of the international section of the Wall Street Journal about how debt collection has gone to India. I talked about it on the radio yesterday. In fact, it was yesterday morning I had this conversation with this guy, and I said, you know, what are you guys going to do about this? And he says, well, we're proposing that there should be, you know, if the job can be done here for $10 and it can be done in India for $2, then there's a $2 cost of getting the job there and back, you know, telco communications. And so it basically costs $4. There's a $6 profit in exporting that job per hour. He says, we want to hit them with a 40% tax on that $6 and then use that 40% for retraining jobs. And I said two things. Number one, what are you going to retrain them for? To work at Walmart? I mean, you know, we've got to create a whole brand new economy from the ground up. And number two, why make it 40%? Why not make it 100% so that people don't have an incentive to send those jobs over to India in the first place? Then you don't need to retrain anybody. I dialed 411 on my local phone system here the other day, and I got somebody in India.
I know. It's sick, because if you're going to do it, and that's what I meant by what I was saying, that, okay, we want to bring new technology online, because like I said, I've worked for NASA, I've worked for a number of different organizations. Okay, you want to bring that in? Oh, that's fine. Make sure that we continue to have our standard of living instead of you trying to decimate it.
Yeah.
You know, and it sucks.
Yeah,
I'm looking at C-SPAN, and I almost want to scream because the people that they have on there are lying and they're smiling at the same time. And the thing about it, which I found real interesting, anyone that you found was for Bush, who's working?
Yeah.
How many people are you going to have that's unemployed that was for Bush?
Yeah, I know it's mind-boggling. And here's the real kind of sad thing about it, Larry, is that so many people, and Bill Clinton was one of them, really bought into, and I think sincerely believed in, the idea that if we simply had absolutely unfettered free trade, if we simply turned the economy over to the multinational corporations, that everyone would benefit, that it would help the United States because we would export more, it would help the other countries because we would import more free trade. And this goes back to what's called the theory of comparative advantage that was advanced in the last century by David Ricardo, is this economist. And the example that Ricardo used, as I recall, was English wool and French cheese, and that's my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, the French make cheese. And the bottom line was, he said, what you should export is what you make well, and what you should import is what you don't make well. And back in the days when countries were primarily importing and exporting agricultural products or products that were manufactured in a unique way, I mean, you know, who's going to, in the United States, manufacture sandalwood ballpoint pens? I mean, you can buy these things in Thailand, right, as souvenirs.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody in the United States is going to make these things. So it's appropriate for us to be importing sandalwood ball, you know, fragrant ballpoint pens from India or from Thailand. But that is such a small part of the world economy. I mean, in David Ricardo's day, 150 years ago, that was most of the world economy. There was comparative advantage. Different countries had things that they did well that other countries didn't do well. But now you have a situation where because a machine will work the same way in China as it will work in the United States, the theory of comparative advantage is nonsense any longer. And now it's a race to the bottom for labor, and economists have not figured this out. It's like you want to grab these people and shake them and say, hey, no, I'm sorry, the world has changed.
Yes.
And I, you know, I find myself even more radical than the labor unions of all things, and I don't consider myself a radical, and I'm saying to people high up in the unions, I'm saying, you know, we need to go back to a tariff system, and not just tariffs on manufactured goods. We need to have tariffs on labor so that the United States can once again become a self-contained, self-supporting, ongoing economy. And we don't, you know, yes, we import things that we don't make here, but let's go back to making things here that we use. Let's go back to making our own clothes, making our own shoes, making our own computers. We can do that, and we can do it very easily with the stroke of a pen. All we'd have to do is undo some of the crazy legislation that has been passed since Ronald Reagan became president, and NAFTA and GATT. And it's just, this is not rocket science.
I know, it's crazy. And the thing that I've been running into, instead of companies hiring people as their workers, they end up farming it out. And basically, it's come down to a lot of the accounting firms and legal firms that have been counseling businesses in doing this, you know, performing this practice.
Yeah.
And I don't know when this took place, but I know it's been a gradual process, and it's terrible.
It started under Reagan. The beginning of the major decline of the middle class in the United States began under Reagan, when Reagan declared war on organized labor. And now you've got things like, this is, again, why this wasn't a screaming headline on the front page of the papers. It was a little tiny story in the business section, either yesterday or Friday's paper, that the Labor Department now, which used to have its charter to protect the interests of labor, right? Instead, you've got the Labor Department run by Elaine Chao, who openly hates unions. The Labor Department has now ruled that, I think it used to be called the Glass-Steagall Act. I could be wrong. I don't have it in front of me. But there's this act that says that full-time workers have the right to collective bargaining in labor in a union situation, and that part-time workers also have the right to collective bargaining. They can also be members of union, and they also have the benefits and all that kind of thing. And the Labor Department has just unilaterally ruled in the last couple of days that, no, if you work fewer than 30 hours, even in a union shop, you're no longer entitled to union protections. And therefore, what's happening is that all these union shops are going to do the same thing that Walmart does right now, so that they can avoid having to comply with local and state regulations with regard to benefits for employees. They're going to say the standard work week is no longer 40 hours. It's 30 hours, so everybody's a part-timer, so nobody has any protections.
That sucks. It's bad.
I know.
It's real bad.
I know. It's.
I don't know. I mean, at this point, I don't know if this country is going to survive in the next 10 years the way it is, because what's happening, even though they're lying, you know, the neocons are lying and Bush is lying, what's going to happen eventually, it's all going to come home to roost.
Yeah, well, I think it's three-quarters of the way here, Larry, and I really do believe people are waking up. I mean, maybe the majority of people voted for George Bush, but when you ask the majority of people if they think his economic policies make sense, the vast majority of people say no. If you ask people if they want him to reform so-called Social Security, they say no. I mean, the AARP just came out against privatization of Social Security. You know, broadly, Americans get it. Why they continue to vote for Republicans is beyond me. Well, it's not. It's because they're very effective at smoke and mirrors, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to believe that Americans are going to start waking up, and folks like you and me are the ones who are going to make it happen. We just need to be telling the truth every single day, and
yeah,
to as many people as possible.
I don't get it. I'm calling from Cleveland, Ohio, and I know you've read about our condition here.
Yeah.
We can't keep police on the street. Can't keep firemen. We have American Greetings here, and they just laid off 150 people.
Jeez.
You know, and I'm sure some of those voted for Bush. I mean, what is it going to take for people to really wake up and smell the coffee?
Yeah, well, I think it's slowly happening. The destruction of the industrial middle class in Michigan took a while. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. Michael Moore made that movie Roger and Me back, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And the folks in Michigan woke up and said enough this year. And then the Democrats took back the legislature and the governorship and the Senate, as I recall, and voted for Kerry. And I think the rest of the Midwest, sometimes it just takes a little while for people to get it, but it's a matter. By the way, I have a quick question for you, Larry, before you go. You're right there in Cleveland, Ohio. What kind of play in the media, how is the local Ohio press, the local TV news there in Cleveland, for example, in the evening, the 6 o'clock news, how are they playing the possibility that there was widespread vote fraud going on in Ohio?
Well, right now, a number of the private interests are now petitioning to have a recount.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel they need to do it. I mean, but it's to a point where I'm getting to a point like, what's the point when you have people that steal elections, they put in a system to hide the fact that they lost and manipulate it by either votes, or in a lot of the black neighborhoods here, they didn't have enough voting machines.
Right.
Okay, so people were lining up.
Or they put in machines that break down.
Yeah, they're just saying that the people are going, even the third-party political parties are not petitioning for a recount. It's just sickening. I'm even going to a point where I've had to take antidepressants because it's just that depressing. Ever since Bush got in office and he started pushing the fact that we're going to go to war, it's, you know, I mean, hey, come on. This, you're going to do that. You're going to depress people. You're going to make things worse.
Yeah.
You know, people are dying, and you switch reasons for doing it. You have Halliburton making big bucks. Like you said, they've been caught with their hands in the cookie jar, and no one has gone to court about it.
Yeah.
When and how is this going to ever happen?
Yeah. Well, it's going to happen if folks like you and me, instead of taking antidepressants, get out there and get active, Larry. I got to tell you, you know, whether it's showing up to volunteer in the soup kitchen or whether it's going door to door or whether it's infiltrating the Democratic Party or whether it's joining up with the Greens or whether it's, you know, running for the local school board, you know, as Michael Dukakis, that's how he got started in politics. You know, just get active, get busy. And because that's what we've got to be doing. That's how we take this country back. It's just really, really very much that simple. Larry, I got to run along. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And keep spreading the good word. Good to hear from you, and good to know that there are good people out there in Ohio who are still spreading the news, the information, sharing the truth and common sense.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Walmart is currently the defendant in the largest sex discrimination class action lawsuit against a private employer in U.S. history. Over 1.5 million women are eligible plaintiffs. And now the nation's largest retailer is asking a federal appeals court to reverse the ruling that made the suit, first filed by 6 women, into a class action. Kelly Ramirez reports from Oakland, California.
In its appeal to the federal Ninth Circuit, Walmart is arguing that a class action is inappropriate because its own studies show that there's no pay discrimination between men and women at 90% of its stores and no pattern of promotion decisions adverse to women. Brad Seligman of the Impact Fund in Berkeley, California, is lead attorney for the plaintiffs.
Well, this is the ballgame for both sides. If we lose the class certification, this case right now is just 6 individual women against the largest company in the history of the world. If, on the other hand, the class certification is upheld, Walmart faces a trial involving every one of its female employees since 1998. We are ready to go to trial, and that trial is going to be held in San Francisco, which, to quote Eddie Murphy, is Walmart's worst nightmare.
Seligman thinks legal rules favor maintenance of the class.
On appeal, which is what they're doing, there's a well-known rule that says the court is required to uphold what the trial judge did in this case unless he abused his discretion or made clearly erroneous factual findings. So it's a very deferential standard, which means that they have a heavy burden of convincing the Ninth Circuit that the judge, despite his painstaking 84-page opinion, was basically out to lunch.
Seligman anticipates a hearing on this appeal in the spring. No date for decision by the Ninth Circuit has been set. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Kelly Ramirez in Oakland, California.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. And wrapping up the day, Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
I can't tell whether I'm today or tomorrow now. Or yesterday.
Today, tomorrow, or yesterday.
Yeah. I just heard my quality from yesterday.
Oh, did you? I think that the radiopower.org stream, they must
dropped out, so they just picked something else to throw in there.
Yeah, they must have had a hiccup. We're showing that we're still sending the stream, but I'm not sure what's happening on their end. So, but it's the end of the show, so. But Billy, we are live on radio stations
all over
the country.
Well, all right, then, let's have something to say. Real quickly, I just wanted to report that you had a report from Santa Cruz a minute ago in the news.
Oh, really?
About the labor relations.
Uh-huh. Did that come out of Santa Cruz?
My wife sits on the library board. And she just, last night they had their big meeting. And up to now, the negotiations have pretty much been finished. And everybody except for the librarians were, the deal they made was basically no cuts for a year.
Uh-huh.
No layoffs. And they'll take, you know, the contract being offered.
Right.
And they're going to vote on that this week. The union reps are all for it, so it's probably going to pass.
This is city employees?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And the librarians as well will get the same deal.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that librarians were unionized.
The city is unionized.
Oh, I see.
And
so
the librarians are city employees.
So
as well.
She's a civil servant as an – I see.
Now, not my wife, because my wife sits on the board.
I see.
She doesn't get paid a dime.
Yeah.
She's a volunteer.
Yeah, but the employees. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well,
everything else going well for you?
Everything is going great, Billy. Thank
you
for the call. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's so much. And another electile dysfunction report here, just very quickly. Why do Canadian elections actually work? Why do Canadians not riot? Well, let me lay out for you their technology. No, actually, they don't have a machine. The technology used in Canadian elections, a pen, a pencil, and a piece of paper with circular spaces marked on it to fill in. And that's it. They don't even use computers to scan their votes the way that we do in the United States. They don't feed them through scanners. Human beings read them. And for some reason, the Canadians just, you know, never have any doubts about their elections. And they don't have multi-billion dollar computer companies run by Republicans. It's really fascinating. Just like most of Europe. Anyhow, thanks, Louise, for producing our program today. Thanks, Ira Gravatt, for engineering it. To Brad for our music. To Shelby for RadioPower.org. To Ben for our stream, or for our archives. And to you for listening. The folks in our chat room. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone